This is the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. Thank you for listening, subscribing, and hitting subscribe on your friend's phone without them knowing. Coming to you from the Kitchen Studios in downtown Raleigh. This episode is sponsored in part by Spot On, tech that helps your business grow. Request a demo at spoton.com. And Joe Van Gogh Coffee, serving the community from seed to cup. And now, the ice cubes are melting, and with food dying in the window, it's Max Trujillo and Matthew Weiss.
Hello, and thank you for listening to the North Carolina Food and Beverage Podcast. I am your co-host, Max Trujillo.
And I am your co-host, Matthew Weiss. And today in studio, we have our first North Alabama Montanan, Mr. Ben Colvin from Asheville, North Carolina of Devil's Foot Beverages.
Woo. Hey, that was a great intro.
Northern Alabama and Montanan?
Yeah.
So like a little Yellowstone, a little...
He grew up in Alabama.
Roll Tide?
Like younger. Went to school in Montana and now claims North Carolina. So he's a North Alabama Montanan.
It's pretty good. It's a good smash.
Yeah.
Wow. So you grew up in northern Alabama.
I grew up in Birmingham.
Birmingham.
Very middle Alabama.
So Roll Tide.
Yeah.
That's Roll Tide.
Yeah, absolutely
country.
Roll Tide. Sorry.
When this comes out, I think the national championships will be very close to...
They're playing on New Year's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Playoffs are on New Year's Day.
You know what else is on New Year's Day?
What was that?
Come on, you're an avid listener to the podcast. You should know this. Do you know what's on... Elizabeth, do you know what's on New Year's Day also other than just New Year's Day?
Nobody knows.
It's my baby boy Matthew's birthday.
It is. Send checks, not letters, not cards.
So happy early birthday.
Thank you.
Or belated whenever you're listening to this. Let's get back to the beverages over here. So Ben, you're from Alabama, but that was as a child?
No, I was there through high school.
Then
I went off to college in Montana, and I spent a number of years out there, and I did my undergrad and graduate work out there. I worked in wilderness therapy, kind of outdoor work, and then got into conservation work, and that's where I met my now wife out in Wyoming, Montana.
Oh, wow.
And she was finishing school out at Western. So
wait, was it in Wyoming or Montana?
It was in Wyoming.
But you were at school in Montana, so you were kind of going
I was working in Wyoming at that point.
I see.
That's
Got
where
it.
You go, you drive down to drop all the bodies off?
Yeah.
Wyoming. And then you come back. Yeah. Is Montana like the show Yellowstone?
I mean, the beauty, yes. The show, absolutely not. The funniest part about that show is there's always something happening.
Yeah.
In Montana, most of the time, ain't nothing happening for a while. You know, there's always something turned over truck with, some devious plot happening.
They should just say that in the beginning. They're like, this is just an amalgamation of 40 years put into one season, just so you know.
Yeah. But it is the beauty for sure is amazing. And we came back this way because my wife was finishing school at Western, and Asheville is about as close to Montana and in Missoula, Montana, as you could possibly get.
Yeah. You got the mountains, you got some cold, you got some snow every now and then.
Not this winter.
Yeah. I just watched that 60 minutes episode on wine. Did you see this at all, Matt?
My father-in-law texted me about it, but I didn't have a chance to watch it.
Kind of interesting, but the gist of it, of course, with talking about global warming is that, and apropos to our show, because we talk about wine, that they interviewed a lot of champagne producers, and they were like this one particular champagne producer they had. It actually was a champagne house I wasn't familiar with, but they were talking about how she decided not to release even one bottle of champagne this year because it wasn't up to snuff, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so she probably just sourced it out and, sold it to other people. But that the global warming is so bad that it's the frost that comes in right before the bud break that happens. Mm. And that some of the other people, the guys in Bordeaux that she interviewed, said, well, as much as it sucks and as much as the yield has been reduced, it actually is the best quality wine we've done in 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
Because once it actually does get into the middle of the season, the heat is so hot for so long that these grapes are beautiful at the end. So he's like, they had a 40% reduction in production. But I guess it's a real thing.
It's a real thing.
When the wine industry is just devastated, you're like, yeah, that's a great example of
Yep.
What's happening to nature?
It's happening here. You guys and all the fruit that we're having issues, you know, year after year. It's either, you know, boom or bust.
Yeah.
This year was the blueberry bust, really hurt some folks. And it's weird. Just the other side of Virginia was booming. Yeah, they had a great blueberry yield. And down here, not so much.
That, and actually, that's the next part of that whole thing. And something you would know, Matt, is they spoke to how England is now turning into basically like the next champagne. It makes sense. You're just going a couple clicks north where it's a little colder and the climate, because a lot of it is that same Kimmeridgian soil, right? And like they have like the same.
It's the White Cliffs of Dover. They have those white chalky soils, just like Champagne, just like the escarpment that you find in like below Epernay in Champagne. So yeah.
And the guy was there. She's like, why now? He's like, well, because now it's warm enough to grow the grapes, and unfortunately too warm to grow them in Champagne. So
yeah, so public service announcement, buy some Gusborne sparkling wine this holiday season in the next couple of days. Get it at Triangle Wine Company if you would like, so, and get the NCFB discount. So we'll just let you know that. But how did you transition from this wilderness man, this Wild Bill Western guy to now making these non-alcoholic beverages?
We were just talking earlier. I've not been in the kitchen in a while. I sued back in like 97, 98.
When he says sued, by the way, he doesn't mean he sued somebody who's sous chef.
Hey.
Just want to clarify.
I thought we were talking lingo. You said escarpment earlier. Yeah. I thought that was a great one.
Got to make sure that everybody that's listening.
Dumb it down. We've got some people that listen to this show. You know.
No. But I worked for some great chefs down there at a super young age.
In Alabama.
Yep. Okay. And learned a ton. And I love the industry. But then I spent 16 years working in conservation work, protecting wild lands, wild places all across the Southeast. And I finished working a lot at the end of my career doing that in Peru and Uganda and here in the Appalachians.
What is it that you actually like? What's your passion play like? Obviously conservation, but is there a certain thing that you want to conserve or like a specific?
I mean, the place is so important. I mean, that's why I came back this way. I met my soon-to-be wife, but there was something always pulling me back from Montana. I left real fast with just the romanticism that I had as a kid to live out there. And I'd visited when I was young, much younger out there. And so I wanted to be out there. Learned a lot of what was going on from that area. Learned a lot in school. But this sense of place always pulls us home. And it tugs at you pretty hard. Being that far from where you grew up, it can be great in a lot of ways. But but kind of want to get pulled back this way. And so coming back towards the South and sort of kind of giving back to where I was growing up. So protecting land is a big part. We're losing all the land to development. We've talked about global climate change earlier. But and we're losing species left and right. So just very passionate about doing
like
that
species
kind of work.
Of different plants and
plants and animals. Yeah, and animals.
It's not like the worldwide fires that we had like all over from Australia to Napa to wherever you want to talk about didn't completely enhance that problem.
Well, and it's funny, in Montana there's like maybe a quarter the number of species of tree species that you have down here. Just the biodiversity in the Southeast is incredible.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work to do. So just I just felt this tug to come back and try to do what I can do from where I'm from and feel rooted back here.
So before we even get into beverages, then I have a question for you, because I mean, I know this, but somebody said it the other day in such plain terms that really made me think about it. And they're like, I don't think a lot of people some people who are somewhere closer to the middle politically are not questioning whether global warming exists. They're questioning that humanity's footprint on it.
Yeah, that's not much of a question.
So in your mind, it's a direct correlation.
And 98% of scientists would agree with that. Mm-hmm. We lost, this week, we lost E.O. Wilson, a pioneer, and coined the term biophilia. Just a huge, huge inspiration on me and many other people in the world of ecology. And
what is biophilia?
You know, the love of biology, the love of.
Okay.
You look up some of his books, you read a book about ants and go like, he wrote a book about ants and he did a lot of research on ants and he thought, ants in the Southeast, who cares? It's very interesting. Really, really interesting.
Because of all that good that they provide and like the things that they actually do.
Yeah. Soil, support of the soil and also just social ability and social networks of ants is crazy. The way they,
I've seen the Pixar movie. It was good.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so yeah, the scientific community is not in any kind of disagreement on this.
Okay.
But yeah, so I moved back to do that kind of work, did it for a very long time, but sort of near the end of it, I kind of got that feeling that I think we've all had at some point where you're like, I'd want to do something that I'm passionate about. I want to do something I love. I want to kind of take control of life and work for myself, be my own boss, have that kind of freedom. And that was kind of an urge in the background, but at the same time, some buddies and I, you know, we'd been going out to having drinks at bars, and just hit us that we were having ginger beer a lot, and it was just terrible. Mm. You know, somebody's putting, oh god,
insane amounts of high fructose syrup,
or like filling a highball with like crushed ice, and then like some like really good bourbon, and then really bad fountain soda, and you're like, why would you do that? And I'm angry that they would do that. And so we started making in their backyard, like, you know, a lot of cocktail bars are doing now. They'll make their own syrups in house. We get a lot of those calls, by the way. They're like, we love doing that, but man, I hate doing that. Can y'all start sending us cans?
Yes, right.
I'll raise my hand for that one too. Like, we had a dude that could make really good ginger syrup, like way back when we were at Wild. He was the only one that knew how to do it, and frankly, it was the only thing he was kind of good at. But no handle. No. That's what we called him.
Oh, what does he do? He's our ginger syrup maker. Yeah, but what is he, like a server, bartender?
No. Bucket full of things without a handle. But his ginger syrup was so damn good. And then he left, and then we went, oh, man, we don't know how to make it. And so it took us a while to get back to the level of understanding how to make it.
Just time-consuming and also, you know, costly when you're doing it in-house. And by the time you start making volume, you're just blowing through that stuff going, this is getting outrageous.
Yeah.
So yeah, we were just playing with it, trying to get something in our backyard that we can make cocktails at home that were
so the ginger beer was
our first.
Yep. That was like the inception of the idea.
Yep. We were just crushing, you know, corny kegs in the backyard just to get something spicier without as much sugar. So just for the listener out there, the regular typical can of soda that you're going to get is about 35 grams of sugar in a can. Typical ginger beer that you're having out in the bar probably has 49 grams of sugar in a can.
Oh, really? I didn't realize it had
so much.
Far more.
And a lot, most of them will say natural flavors or some to that extent. We have no idea. There was, we launched this company right about the same time a woman won that lawsuit against Canada Dry that it didn't actually have ginger in it. Mm. And so they had to change it to be called like ginger flavored ginger ale or something like that. There was a lot of frustration with that little part of our world.
How do we live in like a society where the regulations are so specific about refrigeration, about pesticide, about like just anything holding it, and then you can also just slap natural flavors on something which has no basis and no reality, like no basis in reality?
Well, I think like I learned this in grade school, and I think this is still to this day, the FDA does not have a definition for natural.
Right.
Like, right, which is why
there's no parameters at all.
Some, you know, brilliant lawyer said, hey, because we don't have a definition for this
we
word,
we can put natural flavors.
We can put it out there and no one's litigated against it because it helps sweep everything under the rug. So essentially no one really is going to try to fight that battle because it's the catch-all to help. That's why you can drink a LaCroix or any of these type of beverages that have all these amazing flavors that come out of nowhere, and you're like, how do you do this with zero calorie, with zero sugar, with all that? Oh, it's natural flavors.
Right.
Oh, that sounds good. It's natural.
It's natural.
Yeah. Meanwhile, let's find out what that does to us.
This is the holiday season, and Clark Griswold was famous for creating the polymer that wouldn't allow milk to get into the cereal, so the cereal would never get soggy.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
Gross.
If my face, if I woke up with my face stapled to the carpet, I wouldn't be super surprised.
Eddie?
So this was our, I mean, this seems like a minor frustration in life, but the fact that we couldn't go to a bar and have like a great ginger drink or something was frustrating to us. So we were just kicking around, playing in the backyard, and it just was making for a fun time to hang out with friends and like try different, you know, sweeteners and try different amounts of whatever we're using. And then about the same time, just that hankering to do something on my own. And my wife and I were coming back from a visit to Alabama. And I just was like, I threw it out there. I was like, hey, what would you think? Like, we could make something out of this, right? And she got really excited and was like, I can't believe you're talking about this. You should do this. You should take a leap.
Yeah.
So we kind of were really, really getting serious about it. And then,
your wife was pregnant at this time?
Not yet.
Okay.
So then we found out we were pregnant. Took everybody to burial. Because that's where we'd go to celebrate. We're going to go
again. For those of you listening outside of North Carolina, Burial is a great brewery, not like the cemetery or something like that.
Yeah.
Let's be real clear about that.
Yeah. That's like the circle of life.
Yes. For the most goth couple ever. We went to the cemetery.
Yeah.
We gave birth in the cemetery.
And I've been asked that, like, what did y'all have? And you can't remember a single name of a beer that Burial makes because their sentences or whatever.
Oh, yeah. And they're always changing.
Yeah. But yeah, we got there. We were all having a great time. But there was nothing at the time there that was non-alcoholic for my wife. There was water on tap.
Hmm.
There we go.
Yeah. The studio is always great until the cops come in.
Yeah. So that was sort of a light bulb went off. And we just started realizing that, hey, the last few tap rooms I've been to, there's nothing there. There's maybe a Mountain Dew or a LaCroix or something. And we're looking around and there's enough, you know, bearded craft beer looking guys that we were going, man, this is a thing, you know, that you're coming here for craft beer. There's so much booming in this state in particular in the craft beer world. Why would you go to a craft beer place? And if you needed something non-alcoholic, you're going to have something with quote unquote natural flavors or high fructose corn syrup or something.
Yeah.
Like, why can't we, you know, mimic the craft beer world with its techniques and with its equipment and make something that's healthier, cleaner, and better. And that was it.
And also without alcohol, right? Like, you don't have to have that. It's funny, you know, especially during the holiday season, watching so many comments going up with my friends on Facebook and how they're, you know, a lot of people are trying to drink less or are sober now or for a myriad of reasons why you're trying to do this. And it's like, I hate even saying this out loud because I don't want to be part of the wave of this happening.
Oh, don't say it. Oh, no.
But I feel like the craft beer boom has popped.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
And yeah, because it's diversified now into everything else. And I think non-alcoholic drinks and brewing drinks such as you're doing has also lent itself into making seltzers, which then have alcohol in them as well, like hard seltzers and, you know, the Trulies and the White Claws have all kind of led the charge. But now we're making better. We, the collective group of people making alcohol, are making better versions of these seltzers. And so it's broadened and it's not all about beer any longer. I've just bumped into a brewer recently. His name will go off the record, but he looked at me and said, "Oh, don't get into making beer right now." Yeah. Like, what? He's like, it's a dying market. And I'm like, what? He's like, you want my brewery? Like, kiddingly. Right. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah, seriously. Like, I'm over it. Mm-hmm. He's like, we're done. We need to shift. We need to pivot or we're going to die.
I think that's what it is. I think it's diversification because the funny thing is, and same for non-alcoholic people, in my day job selling wine, mm-hmm. some of my best accounts are breweries.
Yeah.
They're like, because people that go to breweries don't only want beer, like, or there's people that are hardcore beer fans that go there, but guess what? Their friend or their wives or their husband are going there and they want to drink wine or something like that, mm-hmm. or they want to drink non-alcoholic beverage. So if you went to one of these breweries, let's say, mm-hmm. and let's say these breweries were having trouble with their POS system and they didn't figure out how to put the NA Bev and figure out the cost in with the alcoholic Bev, and mm-hmm. they just couldn't do it.
Now you're speaking.
Well, guess who would help you with that? Spot On Technologies. They are the restaurant foremost forward-thinking tech company because they integrate everything from back of the house to payroll to whatever you could imagine could be an on-premise necessary solution
inventory
for your business.
Management,
inventory management.
Costing.
Everything.
And you can do it at home because it's in the cloud.
That's
right.
You
don't have to go to the office to figure out all your numbers. You can do it all on your cell phone. It's awesome.
Right. It's like the technology that the big chain down the street already has, but you could have it on your own business. And all you need to do is call Tanya Manebo or email her, TanyaM@spoton.com.
Yeah, and check the link in the show notes. We actually fixed our show notes. They're all set right now. So click on all those fancy little links and give Tanya a call. Just give her a chat.
First of all, Tanya is a great person to chat to. She's always high energy, like positive affirmation. So just call her.
Take her out to coffee.
Take her out to coffee.
Yeah.
Where should they go get coffee?
Maybe go to Joe Van Gogh Coffee.
That's a brilliant idea.
Because there's so many locations all over the triangle, starting up there in Hillsboro, going through Durham, out into Raleigh. And I'm looking at my right hand, and I have some Guatemalan Pizcaya coffee in my hand, which is delicious. Flavor notes. Let's see. What are we getting out of here, folks? What are we getting? Does anybody have a note of flavor?
Come on, Ben. You're a flavor maven. A flavin.
I think I'm getting some there.
I get like a... Oh, what do you...
Well, JVG says is maybe a little grilled peach, a little marzipan and caramel. Kind of interesting right there.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And then I'm going to totally brutalize this this area, but this is from Guatemala, the town of San Juan Zacatepeques. Zacatepeques. Zacatepeques.
Zacatepeques.
So drink Joe Van Gogh coffee. Go to joevangoghcoffee.com, click the link in our show notes, or just go to your local coffee shop in the area with Tanya. And
yeah,
have some coffee.
Yeah, have fun.
But let's get back to it.
Yeah. So, all right. So you found the niche, the need of this like craft, non-alcoholic, non-high fructose corn syrup.
Yep.
You're using local honey and organic some sort of organic sweetener that you're sourcing from farms.
So this is kind of coming full circle here. We, I'm a huge, huge advocate of transparency. This natural flavors BS is beyond me. And I just, you know, and as a parent and as a, you know, when my wife was pregnant, that was one of the things like, how are you not labeling your food or what's in this? Right.
Yeah.
So we were very explicit how we want to be clear with this. We use, our ginger. We went through enough of this to figure it out. We're working with a partner in Peru.
Okay.
Pulling organic, ginger right out of the ground. It's processed the very next day. So it's come off the ground, gets washed, gets processed the next day. We get it in. So it's frozen by the time I get it. But, you know, traditionally it's going to take 3 to 4 weeks to cross the ocean and get to you in the root form. You're going to lose 70% of the yield. By the time this stuff gets to us, it's almost green colored. It's beautiful. It's just the most beautiful looking stuff you've ever seen. And we'll use puree and we'll use some of the juice as well.
How do you find ginger root? Like, you forage for it, or
it's farmed?
It's farmed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's actually a shout out to Rayburn Farms out near Asheville. They've been taking a good stab at growing ginger up in the mountains. So they've got greenhouses where they're growing ginger root, turmeric, some kind of cool roots out of there.
Okay.
But
you're typically growing these in kind of like where you're growing coffee, right? Like like this is, or like in the Far East and all. But you can. Like the climate needs to be very precise to grow ginger.
Pretty precise, yeah. That's why you're usually seeing it out of Peru, Hawaii, and China for the most part.
Okay.
And the different styles that you get in are crazy. You know, you'll see that the typically in the store you're seeing that sort of yellow ginger root that's mainly coming out of China. It's really huge knobs, really big stuff. It's got a lot of water content, just not quite as much punch as we like. Stuff out of Peru is the green, typically the green ginger, so it's a lot like smaller knobs. But it's got more bite to it, and we weren't playing around at the beginning. We were going heavy with it right off the bat.
Right,
and
so like for your initial ginger beer, you can expect a nice spicy expression of ginger beer.
Well, we did two kind of levels of that. We definitely had people. One of our first actual customers was, hey, I kicked my husband's sixtals off the kegerator. Can I get kegs of ginger beer? I'm pregnant. This is very helpful for me.
For their house or for their
house?
Yeah. Love that.
Drinking some serious
soda. She was just like, it's you know, it's lower in sugar.
Right.
And so we were like, we don't want to blast them out with spice. So we kind of introed with this, you know, somebody that likes a Canada Dry or something that's not too, too spicy. Let's come at them with something like that. So it's a lot. It's an intro. You taste the ginger. You get it, but doesn't hit you that hard. And then we kind of came heavier with the red can that's a little more fiery. It's a great mixer. But yeah, we were blasting this out of our kitchen and that's kind of where the name came from. We had piles of ginger root that we were just processing different batches. And my wife was like, you all have to get this out of my kitchen. This devil's root. She called it devil's root out of nowhere. I've never heard that word. She was like, all this devil's foot. Can you get it out of our... I was like, why? What the hell is devil's foot?
You know?
And she was like, well, they're like gnarly knobs like all over the place that grow in the ground. I just think of them like...
devil's foot. Okay.
I was like, that was a pretty brilliant kind of thing that popped out of her mouth.
Yeah.
And we just took it and went with it. It was about that time that I just decided... I got to transition out of a job if we're going to do this. We had played with the processes enough that we were like, let's do this. Let's not do this the old way. If you've worked in the food and beverage world, you've seen those high fructose bags. You got to slap the bag of high fructose and hook it up to the CO2. It is gross. It's the grossest thing you've ever seen.
Yeah.
Just a bag of syrupy goo. We're not doing that. We would never want to do that. Let's mimic the process of craft beer. So I'm like, we just straight up, we'll mash in ginger root. We're letting it macerate and mash it in like you would grain in a brewery. Pull off as much flavor off of that root as you can. Bring it back over and pasteurize it with sweeteners in your brew kettle. And I mean, we're mimicking the processes. And as long as we can, you know, keep doing that, we're going to do it because it keeps you away from having the weird.
So you're actually
alien goo.
You're brewing these sodas. But when you say brewing, like. I mean, it's more like brewing coffee.
Right. Yeah, we're not having to like transition sugars from the grains in the mash or something like that.
Right.
But the longer, you know, the way that we can actually mash it in, we're pulling more flavor. I swear you can tell the difference if you're just throwing in juices or something that's been processed.
Sure.
You're getting a different flavor than if you...
Let's taste these, Max.
Yeah, pull it off the root and bring it into it.
Should we go...
go white can first.
White can first and then fuego second. Yeah, makes sense.
So we immediately were using organic cane sugar. It's an easy sweetener for us. Sometimes just straight sugar can get a little aspartame-y kind of thing, so we didn't want any part of that. So we've been blending it with honey. We went really heavy with honey at the beginning, and it was a lot of... Honey can get you.
Yeah.
But it's an amazing sweetener. It adds depth. It adds flavor to it.
What do you mean honey can get you? Like just as far as changing the flavor or just getting super sweet?
Yeah, it'll get really, really sweet real fast. It's just got so much more, fructose to it.
I'm just smelling this and like that hits your nose, the ginger. And this is the white can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's not too much.
It doesn't have that cloying palate. Thickness that you're going to get with those really high fructose drinks. Yeah, this is like, it's refreshing, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, and the ginger is definitely predominant, you know. And yeah, this is just the white can. So this is mild, if you will.
And as we move through these, you'll see the reviews we get from anyone ever is, you know, we're in from Atlanta or we're from wherever and we had your stuff. We've got to order it. We need to take it home with us. Because it's lower in sugar, it's refreshing, it's real, so it doesn't taste fake to us at all, and it's... We'll get to one of these that people will always say, man, I love it, it doesn't taste like fake blueberry muffin. Well, because it's real blueberry,
right?
It tastes like a fake blueberry muffin.
What is the sugar content in this, then?
The white can's only 14 grams in that can.
Wow.
Red can has 18 grams. We boosted just to balance out the heat a little more.
That's still really low.
Yeah.
What's the lowest sugar content soda you have?
14.
Okay.
Yeah.
14's low.
Yeah.
Have you played with going lower than that? And
we have, and we're going to come out with some stuff soon that's really, really low. Like you said, like when you hit the LaCroix and you're wondering how the hell does there have no sugar in those, so there's a reason. If you, you're going to get something out of real fruit, you know, whether it's whatever it is. So as we get into more of like the lower sugar sparkling water kind of stuff with real fruit juice, it's pretty, it adds a little bit of sweetener.
Yeah.
But it's nothing
at
added.
At that point, it's like negligible.
It's real fruit sugar. It's natural. It's natural.
It is
in natural. The real way. I have to say, and Max, you were talking about this, like, you know, in our business, controlling your intoxication or the amount you're imbibing on. And I just, there's a million applications for these, but for me, like, I realize, you know, lately, you know, late at night, you're like, oh, do I really need another glass of wine, or do I really need another drink, or really, but I still want a beverage, like, while I'm watching a game or something like that, and this is the perfect accompaniment, because you feel still, like, it's flavorful, you're not getting more drunk, you're actually getting hydrated and putting good stuff in your body, so, like...
But you need that bite.
You want that bite. Like, you don't want to... Like, and you drink sparkling water or something like that, but it's not as refreshing.
When I make a zero-proof cocktail or a mocktail, I'm always challenged with not just... Like, how do you make it not just taste like fruit juice or just a soda, for that matter? Like, how do you make it a cocktail? And I always think it's the acid or it's the bite. It's the
burn.
The burn, yeah, because the
you want that, or whatever, like, is gonna structure, acidity,
emulate that same thing.
Yeah.
So I'll use like drinking vinegars or just vinegar in general. It depends on which one, an apple cider vinegar, or it depends. I mean, on flavor profile, you could do a rice wine vinegar or so, but at least that gives you a little punch. And this has enough acid in it to where you're taking a sip and you're like, ooh, okay. Like you want that. Yeah, you want some presence on your palate, and I think that's what you're getting here. So
we're in this weird world of hitting pH and hitting. We're mixing kind of the beer world, the NA world, the wine world. We're when you're measuring your bricks, we're trying to get the right amount of sugar out of fruit that we're adding to our mix as well. So that we're measuring a lot of different measurements that go into what we're doing.
There's some chemistry in there.
There's a lot of different chemistry that keeps it sort of as balanced, as much balanced as we can keep it.
How did you, because I don't know where that part of your education kind of came in. Is this something that you picked up on the job?
Well, no, just, I worked in the kitchen and did a lot of work back in the day and really have a passion for it. So I've cooked my whole life and And then once you live in Asheville long enough, you brew beer or you work with people that brew beer.
It just comes with
the
job.
It's like you move in and you brew beer. So that was one of the cool parts about this, because as the boom was happening, we had, you know, the access to equipment. So people were outgrowing their equipment, particularly Catawba Brewing that was growing pretty quick at the time. Billy Pyatt, just one of the nicest guys in the world. I reached out and he was like, hey, man, we've got serving tanks and we've got, you know, different bits of equipment that we've kind of outgrown for sure. Mm-hmm. And so we picked up a lot of Catawba's equipment they've grown out of and bootstrapped our startup. And we're just started like, hey, man, let's start doing this on. We're not doing 5 gallon batches anymore. Let's do 200 gallon batches and see where we can get. And
did you have a location? Like you have a facility?
We found a facility through a friend. They had essentially like a garage, you know, warehouse part that was a really small garage place that we could get into. And the entrepreneurial spirit is alive in this country right now, for sure.
Totally. And especially in North Carolina.
Yeah.
So that's another thing, because from what I understand about like brewery, like the whole canning process, while it's great, helps your distribution, it's a big commitment. It's a big barrier to entry. So did they have a canning line as well?
So when we jumped into it, we wanted to be in kegs. And pretty quick realized that no matter how much we tried to push the NA style, no matter how we tried to push the variety and the diversity in your tap room, giving up that dollar on a tap handle that you could put beer on or something is just not going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And then once we got into packaging, it was obvious that cans allow us to have brand marketing everywhere that it's going to be. So let's move into that. We started to work with one of the mobile units, the mobile canners, from the get-go. And like right when we were about to start packaging, they were bought out, and the relationship got a little weird and didn't seem to work for us. You know, like if they're going to come by once a month and can, that's not going to be enough for us.
That's the problem with the mobile canning. Yep. You work on their time.
Took out a really small loan and bought our canner. We had we had a two head filler, sort of semi manual canner. We did 150,000 cans on.
Jeez,
7 cans
a
minute.
That's some time spent.
Yeah, one of these days my hands are gonna give out and I'm gonna be like, that's why.
Well, hopefully, once you get the NCF and bump, you're gonna get more money to buy an even bigger, better canner. Speaking of cans, what's the next can we should open?
I would go. You've gotten into the red can?
We got the red can.
Okay,
yeah.
That red can's got more of that bite. Give a quick rinse and get into the green. The limeade's my new favorite. This is I went down to Belize for a growing season that I was going to help harvest citrus fruits, and this is what reminded me of down there, that in the morning it wasn't orange juice that we would have, it was fresh lime juice and like a little bit of sugar.
Yeah, I like that subtle difference. I know, like as Matt's pouring this and passing it around, when I was helping to set up Y Hills beverage program, we were thinking like we got to do something that's in the non-alcoholic world, and I had your stuff and I'm trying to remember where I had it, but it really spoke to me. I was like, oh, I love this, it's different, I like North Carolina products in general, I want to do this, I like that the sugar levels were low. Mm-hmm. But also there was just a, I don't know, no other way to say it, there's a cool factor with your stuff. It just, it's, you know, you feel better popping a can of this than, you know, a Mountain Dew or something like that. And so we brought those sodas in over there at Y-Hill, and they did pretty well. And, you know, some, like, you'll find like the different times of the year, like everyone will gravitate to like the sparkling lemonade or this one, the limeade during the summer. And then, you know, then you get the ginger beer and all that for the winter time and fall. So it's good, but the
ginger, this one, I can't believe it.
He's been sitting on this for how long now?
I love this. This is one of my absolute favorites that we make. And we've made a lot of tequila friends with this one. Yeah. I guess you could tell.
Yeah.
I'd want gin with this too. Like, this could be a really good gin cocktail real quick.
Max Trujillo Fojito.
The Fojito. Oh, okay.
You macerate mint, some jalapeno.
I like that.
I'm telling you, man.
Max Trujillo Fojito. All right.
The mocktail world is insane right now. And.
Well, so that's
can we make that happen?
I can make a fojito.
Well, no, I mean, let's make it a devil's foot Trujito.
The Trujillo fojito?
Ooh. Or the Trujito?
The Trujillo. Let's workshop that
one. I like that.
All right. Let's put it on a poll, as they would say in sports radio.
We were funny enough, we were talking about with having you on, the conversation of Dry January came up. To which Matt is
I'm
not
sorry,
a fan.
Matt.
I loathe Dry January.
Yeah.
And for what reasons, Matt?
Well, First of all, it's just like the end means the end of celebration. As aforementioned, my birthday happens to fall in January.
Yeah.
And in my business, it affects my alcohol. Pocket. Yeah, I yeah. sell wine, so that's not a good thing.
Yeah, okay. So well, it hits your pocket, and it also is the end of a... You know, my therapist would say, you know, alcohol doesn't equal joy, Matt. Joy can be joy anywhere, so just the alcohol doesn't be, you know, part of it all.
I feel that impinges upon my enjoyment. How is that?
I feel statements. Yeah, I like
I
that.
Use my eye statements.
Yeah, I feel like shit. a couple days ago, I felt like shit. I was telling Matt I drank way too much bourbon on Christmas Day with the with Mr. Hoyle, the voice of the podcast. And then I come home and I'm now sipping with the bourbon with my other neighbor on the other side of the house. I'm like, what did I do? And then I was wrecked the whole day. And then the next day, I didn't even feel that good. And now today is the next day, the third day. And I'm starting to feel a little better. And definitely this ginger beer is kind of like settling the tummy.
We sell non-alcoholic beverages. We make non-alcoholic beverages. But we're not enemies of alcohol at all.
No,
we're
not. Friends.
We compliment this style everywhere we go. We're our biggest fans are tap rooms, brew houses, you know, bottle shops, just to offer that something that just sort of like is a parallel to what you came for, something that's a celebration that's bubbly, but maybe you don't have, you know, but there are a lot of people that take on Dry January. A lot of people make it about a week.
Yeah.
But that's interesting. Yeah. You want to do this?
Quitters.
Who wants to do this? Let's see how far we can go. You can be done after day one.
No, I'm not doing it. Right. I'm not a quitter.
Well, but on a serious note, we've partnered with one of our cans here with Ben's Friends, and you guys are familiar with them.
Yes.
And, definitely. Yeah.
It was such the coolest organization. And I didn't spend that much time in the back of the house, but oh God. Or some late nights and some.
Yeah.
Ben's Friends being a food and beverage sort of focused alcohol sobriety support group that just to offer something again that's a celebration that we hear from so many people that I don't go out anymore because everywhere I go I have to have like tonic water with lime and it's very clear I'm the guy that's not drinking tonight and I'm not having as much fun. So if we're going to provide anything that's bubbly, that's a celebration, that's non-alcoholic, and that's Mike. And a lot of people just say, I go out all the time now because they have your stuff there.
Yeah.
And I can have a can and feel like I'm part of the group still, and no one's giving me the evil eye. You know, why are you not drinking with us? You know, I'm making the choice not to. So just to provide that option is something that we're really proud to do. And
but I'm having an inspiration right now.
Yeah.
More... Oh yeah? Yeah! Oh really?
Please don't interrupt my inspiration.
Oh, here it comes, folks.
Because the Trujito is in workshop now, and I'm thinking of the Weiss wine, a sparkling non-alc wine / soda. You know,
yep.
And maybe we use some North Carolina wine grapes as the sweetener to make it not muscadine. Maybe sorry. There's some good. But
where would you sell that?
Well, in all the bottle shops that you do.
He's serving you up.
He's serving you up, man.
Yeah.
Maybe Triangle Wine Company, Matt.
Oh, gosh. We already plugged Triangle Wine Company, but yes, absolutely Triangle Wine Company.
Yeah, we haven't plugged
because
them yet.
You already are in Triangle Wine Company. I was doing my research and where I could find you guys in this area.
Yeah.
And Triangle Wine Company was on top of the list. So thank you, Chris and Glenn, for having the
wherewithal.
The wherewithal, the foresight to... find Devil's Foot and our friend Ben here.
Well, you've not had it because we made it a couple years ago, but we could have renamed it the Matt Raspberry Berliner Weiss. It was awesome. We did a collab with Green Man and took Green Man Brewing's Berliner Weiss. I think it's raspberry, blackberry, blueberry, something like that. And we were like, we're going to clone it and work with you guys. And we kind of co-labeled. And I swear you couldn't tell side by side. We just, you know, soured that stuff out really well. We can tell the difference. Cool. There's an NA Berliner Weiss.
Yeah.
Pretty easy.
I think we need to collab here. Because you said we need to come out to the mountains. We do need to get back out to Asheville.
Well, hey, and I'm opening up Crafton. I want to bring some NA stuff. Most assuredly, we will have non-alcoholic drinks on our menu.
Mm-hmm.
And it's for those reasons. It's about inclusivity. It's not it's not for making a political statement or doing whatever. It's about... Sometimes you're hungover. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you don't drink. Sometimes you're with child. Sometimes you are a child.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just, these are so many different reasons why, you know, and also like maybe it's just noon on a Tuesday,
yeah,
and you want a taco and you don't feel the need to, yeah, have a beer, you're like,
but you,
no,
want like a, the you, whole food and beverage experience.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have a thirst and a palate that cannot be quenched with just a simple sugary high fructose corn syrup drink. That's the whole point.
One in this state in particular, where servers are very restricted about what they can do or not do during work, we have tons that email us and are like, thank God my boss brings your stuff in so we can have it. I'm not having to drink off the fountain. I'm
right,
not having to just have water,
yeah,
through,
no,
my
I'm
shift,
not giving these to our servers. I'm going back to spot on with our inventory management. You don't get to take any of these free sodas. Yeah.
Well, they would be able to create a button for you that says, you know, free sodas, and then
yeah,
you work it out somehow. What should we try next?
Get into the lemon. This was our approach to San Pellegrino in particular, their limonada. The San Pellegrino still has about 35 grams of sugar in it. That I think people see the logo and they think it's sparkling water, maybe, that is no sugar added, but there's a lot of sugar in that thing.
Yeah.
And again with these, with all of these, we kind of like at the beginning thought, you know, as a business, you should probably, you know, cut your cost of goods and figure out how to do this cheaply. There's just no cutting corners. If you make it fresh, if you're squeezing it fresh, it's just far beyond any product that you could get if you're going to get it like pre-made or pre-done. Right?
I mean, that tastes like a fresh lemon.
Yeah.
Well, and I think what you're probably going to taste is some of the tones of the bitterness and the pith.
Yeah, mm-hmm. You're getting all of it.
So we're a huge fan of, as we get into my background in conservation, we'll get into this, but the full fruit life. So we've probably running a new machine now that's pulling off zest. I'm probably pulled 1,000 pounds of zest this quarter.
Wow.
So all of our fruit's getting zested before it's getting squeezed. It's getting squeezed and then moved on. And we've in the past actually used those for distilling, getting essential oils out of those lemons and limes after we've even zested and juiced them.
Well, the difference between Kettle One Citron versus like the Absolute,
yeah,
Citron. Back in the day when we were at Cafe in LA,
that, yeah,
we had the guy come in and do a lecture on Kettle One, and he's, mm-hmm, like, well, we don't use the juice, we only use the oils, and you put it in, and then you think about it, we're like, well, yeah, when you make a cocktail, you don't, you express the oils from the back of the rind into the cocktail,
yep,
you're not really squeezing the juice in there, so if you're going to throw it into a booze or whatever, it's like you're already kind of playing in that same realm, so that makes sense.
Well, and we're brewing with flavor. That. Yeah, we brew with the zest in there, with some of that zest in there to get some of that, a little bit of bitterness. It just adds, it feels like you're saying, it doesn't just feel like lemon juice, it feels like the fruit, like,
yeah,
the lemon
like
fruit.
You just bit into the whole thing, yeah.
But then we've got whatever 1,000 pounds of lemon and lime zest, so now we can actually work with breweries and distilleries and wineries and whoever's looking to do something really interesting and bring that product in. If you've ever known anybody to work at a brewery that uses zest, they typically have one of their assistant brewers back there like hand zesting.
Forever. Oh yeah, remember?
It's pretty horrible.
Greg at Wild zested to make his first hard seltzer. He's like, yeah, I hate this now, because it was orange zest, I think, and he might have done a few cases.
Even like using like a drill and a paddle, and just using a hand drill, and do it just takes forever. And like
Eddie Van Halen style,
breaking up your hands. And like,
wait, so what do you guys do to zest?
We have a machine. So
nice.
We've got our crews in there, you know, zesting these guys off where they get juiced, and we're packing it up, vacuum sealing it, packing it, so we can get it out to use for other folks. Same way with all of our fruits. We use blueberries and cherries and strawberries. And we're in their fresh pressings. My buddy Paul, who's back at the space right now. Hi, Paul.
Hey, Paul.
A couple of weeks ago, he was in there pressing out 700 pounds of organic blueberries off this season.
Oh, wow.
And the space just, you know what it smells like in a brewery when they're brewing grain, and you're like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Wait till you smell like ginger steeping or like fresh pressed strawberries and blueberries going on. It's like
amazing.
Whole new world. But then we're taking all those blueberry skins and everything and working with Bramari Brewing in Nashville right now and some others over there that we're just, you know, use our fruit and they're fermenting off the fruit and getting some really cool products out of it.
Like the crushed fruit.
Yeah.
So like almost, yeah, that's cool. It's like, it's very European what they do, like in terms of making grappa and that stuff, but they also use that fruit and all put it back into compost or grains and stuff like that.
We're getting
and
as much, liquor. Yeah, we're getting the juice that we can get out of it, but you've got plenty of flavor and plenty of color and everything out of what's left in there.
Right.
But the cherries too, those cherries, we use a lot of Montmorency and Ballots and like really good sours that pair really well with beer. So like they're doing really cool stuff with that.
Where are you getting your citrus from? Because that's the one thing that North Carolina can't really do.
Right. We get most of our citrus from Florida. We get some from California. trying to keep everything. I mean, we absolutely keep everything certified organic that we're bringing in from those companies. The only thing not on our can that's not certified organic is anything we're using from local farmers.
Okay,
we do that,
and it's just not certified, but they're still farming organically.
We work with those farmers that we can get to know, that we know they're not spraying, that they're doing right practices, that just haven't gotten certified. But we want to support the small farmer that way. So we're working regionally. We bring fruit from North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia. To all the South Carolina listeners out there that think that South Carolina peaches are better than Alabama peaches, you're wrong. So we'll have Alabama. Well,
isn't Georgia the mecca of peaches, or the haven for peaches?
Hopefully, we bring in Chilton County, Alabama peaches next year and do a peach.
He's not going to give any respect to the Georgia, those Bulldogs.
Right. Well, they got to get through Cincinnati
that's
first.
Tough. So. My business partner, Jacob, is went to Georgia, and we kind of have. No, we're all good. We don't have anything.
It's a friendly rivalry.
Yeah.
Okay. Organic cane sugar.
Yep.
Why are more people not using that? And I mean, I get, like, with the big companies, Pepsi, Coca-Cola, it's probably easier and cheaper to use high fructose corn syrup, and now it's like what people expect. But yeah, why aren't we more people using organic cane sugar?
Cheaper. Just, you can go cheaper to get bleached stuff from wherever.
All the money.
But to get it, to have certification from stuff, which is, you know, leads us to another
or
part.
Or even if it's not organic, just pure cane sugar.
Yeah.
Right.
But leading to the distribution and sales side of what we do, working with folks in this area in particular, I have loved working with Weaver Street Markets. Mm-hmm. They do so much to help small businesses and folks around this state. And being able to show them certifications of all of our ingredients, of where we're sourcing them, the organic certifications, the small farmers, where we're getting farmed produce from, is a huge deal for us. So if you'll see on every one of those cans, there are icons of everything in there. There's a little bee that's for our honey. We're very clear of what's in that can.
Yeah.
We want it, and being able to show that is helpful with the retail side. They want to know what's in there too, and they can talk to their customers about that. We bring our honey from upstate South Carolina.
Okay.
This is the coolest. I don't know, man. This kind of came out of nowhere, but we're working with this guy that down there at Bell Honey Farms. He doesn't have, so to get certified organic as a bee farmer, you have to have whatever, like 10 miles of no spray of organic fields within 10 miles of your field. So the bees can't leave the hives and get into stuff that's non-organic.
Oh, wow. That's a challenge.
Which doesn't exist. You know, there are like farms in Iowa maybe that do that, but then it's still a farm. You walk and you see a field and there's just hives as far as you can see. This guy was doing something super cool that he was putting his hives all throughout like five or six counties in South Carolina, I think, and getting working with groups that are like particularly hunters that have deer fields all over the place that have been spraying. And he was convincing them not to spray. Like, we can put these bees in there. They're going to pollinate all the plants, all the fruits, all the trees to bring the deer into your fields. Put the hives under the deer stands because they kind of mask the scent of the hunters. And so he's got them in like deer fields all over South Carolina where he can put beehives everywhere.
Amazing.
And then working with some landowners, Mary Chestnut Boykin family. That's a really cool book from the perspective of a woman during the Civil War. Their family land, when they're doing selective timber cuts, bring him in. He gets to put.
Which book is this?
I can't remember.
Chestnut Boykin.
Mary Chestnut Boykin.
She's the writer.
She wrote.
I'll have to check that out.
We'll ask our producer. What's the Mary Chestnut Boykin?
Mary Chestnut Civil War, 1981, won the Pulitzer Prize for History in 1982.
Oh, right. Yeah, it's a good book.
But they'll do selective timber cutting, and he can come in and put bees in there, and the bees just help to pollinate and grow what's in that area. And it also just creates some complexity, the honey. You're not getting a uniform, like, so it's part of what we do, you know, that's craft.
Yeah.
That if you're getting citrus, if you're getting limes from Mexico or limes from California or limes from Florida, there's going to be some variation there.
Sure.
So we're working with the chemistry, but you're also going to have some variation. The same with the honey. And that's part of what's beautiful, I think, about it, is that you want consistency to an extent. But just to be boring, you know, I can have a machine make a boring product, I guess, or I could bring in whatever syrups and make a boring product. But if we can bring in, and I'm telling you, the blueberries from this year were crazy good. We were bringing them from Southern Virginia, and they just had so much flavor and I don't know. You could tell a huge difference between seasons.
Yeah.
For the sake of time, because you also have these other flavors as well. Just run through what we have. So, what's this one I'm looking at? Pink.
We do pink robots. We do that with strawberries, typically from upstate South Carolina. But they're fresh. It's fresh strawberry. I don't know. In the brewery world, you know, there's a lot of Oregon fruit and pasteurized fruit that they're going to be adding for that reason. That's pasteurized. But we can bring in all this, and it's amazing. You open this these purees up, and they smell so good.
Yeah.
You can open the can, and it smells like fresh strawberry.
Hmm.
The blueberry, as well as blueberry sparkling blueberry lemonade. What we did this year, we did a cherry limeade with Montmorency and Ballantine cherries, upstate New York. And then the peaches, we did this peach collaboration for Ben's friends. That was, it was super awesome. Again, just trying to be really subtle and clear with what you're making. You're not trying to overpower it and make it hit you in the face flavor that is like a fake muffin or something.
Right? Yeah.
You want to come at it with a real flavor.
Yeah.
So I got to ask, how's business going?
That was great. We've worked really, you know... Well, we talked earlier about doing something for yourself kind of allows you this freedom and you feel like you're working for yourself and you're doing all this, you know, we get the Willy Wonka recipes all the time, right?
Yeah.
But the bigger you get, the irony is the more problems and the headaches come up.
More money, more problems.
Right. Yeah.
But we've been fortunate to be very clear about how we wanted to grow and the mission and the vision that we wanted to have. So we have a big focus on doing less good and more harm and our sustainability practices with full fruit and using the organics that we use and using small farms. We have a big concept of working with our communities and growing the right way. So we work with distributors that we kind of have developed partnerships with, right? We don't want to go into a huge distribution warehouse and we're the fifth non-alcoholic on their portfolio and we're lost in the threat. We're working with smaller folks. We work with Artisan Beverage here out of Charlotte.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
We get to pair a lot with some of their breweries that they distribute, but we're getting out to the right spaces in North Carolina. We work with Low Country out of South Carolina. We just recently opened with Alabev out of Alabama. And we're looking to go into Georgia this year.
Wow.
And it's, to us, has been the smart growth. You know, we've seen competitors and people in our field see that national chain contract and say, let's go for it. And pretty quick, you can't meet capacity or you can't meet local accounts. And
yeah.
Our local accounts are what got us where we are. We're always going to want to take care of those folks. And the minute I can't get, you know, any of my product down to Burial Beer or down to some of our early supporters, I'm going to feel pretty bad about it. So we're growing the right way. We're working with those distributors to get into the markets, the Weaver Street markets, your co-ops. Earth Fair Grocery took us throughout all their stores. So we've kind of tried to do this in a controlled fashion to get to the point where now we are going to be going into a much larger space, much larger equipment this year.
You get to have that conversation with Jeff Bezos at all anytime soon?
Don't think we're going to end up doing much work with Amazon, but we're moving into 12,000 square foot
facility.
Yeah,
but Whole Foods is a nice place to be on a shelf.
We'll work with Whole Foods for sure. I'm not getting into the shipping side of it. Is what I'm gonna get to.
Yeah.
We're going into a 12,000 square foot facility, bigger, 10 barrel brew house.
Right outside of Asheville?
Still in Asheville. And moving into our new canner. Like, we started off with doing 7 cans a minute by our hands, and we did 500,000 cans this year, but this new canning machine coming in, we'll do 50 to 100 cans a minute.
Wow.
We'll be putting out pretty good product now. There's going
to
be
it's like eight and a half times more product.
Yeah. It's a lot.
That's awesome.
But without the crew back at home doing all this, we don't exist. We brought on some like tight crew. A lot of folks, we get a lot of calls from brewers and assistant brewers. They're just like, I'm done with the field. Done this. It's high stress. The alcohol side. Y'all looking for work? And bring them over. They know the equipment. They know the processes. They know the mentality. And they can step right in and do what we do really well. So we're finding great people to work for us.
That's a unicorn in this world right now. Yeah, that's amazing. The other thing is, actually, there's more synergy between us. Do you know that our businesses have the same birthday?
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, they are 1 year younger to the day by us. They, December 1st, 2017, is that right?
Sort of.
At least that's what's in the literature.
We'll call it that.
Yeah. And we are birthday. December 1st, 2016. So happy 4 years.
Thank you.
We are celebrating our fifth year.
Mm-hmm.
By this time, I'm not sure there'll be a little video tribute to the 5 years of work this podcast
has done.
Get on
it, Forrest.
Yeah, Forrest. Jeez, run, Forrest, run.
Cut, Forrest, cut.
But there'll be a little tribute video coming out sometime after this episode has been released.
Yeah. Well, so to recap, we'll see. I'm saying this now. I maybe won't say this later on, but
if you speak it into the pod,
Try dry January. I'm going to try it.
Oh, my God.
Dare you.
Elizabeth, you're down? You're going to be with me? All right. Matt's already out. Day one, he's out. I mean, that doesn't mean... Now, can I have champagne at the 31st into... Like, that's still the 31st, right?
Oh, yeah.
I guess, I don't know.
Even after
dry January, it could be whatever rules, there's no official dry January.
I'm saying rules.
No, 11:59 and 59 seconds. No. You must not consume any more alcohol.
No, Trujillo rule is until my head goes to the pillow on New Year's Eve, I'm fine to have an alcoholic beverage. Right. And then, boom, Matt's birthday next morning, no alcohol for the month. I'll see how far I get. We'll track it. And if anybody else wants to do it with me, track it with me. And we'll see how far we go. I know it's going to ruin all of Matt's sales. Just get him a nice birthday present to tide him over. Get him Jeff Bezos cards.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, and do that. But this is fantastic, man. Thank you for coming all the way out here. Thank you for listening to the podcast, too.
Oh, huge fan of the podcast.
Sometimes, you know, we feel like we're just shouting into the void. We don't know who's actually listening. But it is nice when we know that somebody is out there listening. Well, yeah, I guess that's it. What else you got, Matt?
Well, I just want to ask, if you want Devil's Foot Beverage and you're somewhere within Alabama, Georgia, maybe Tennessee someday, or South Carolina, Artisan Beverage, Alabama Beverage, or you can just look it up on your website.
Devil'sFootBrew.com, mm-hmm. And there's a locate finder there, so you can find our products near you. And our distributors are really great about getting it out.
Are you selling them in kegs as well?
Some limited ways.
Kind of
we
moved
are.
Away from doing that, right? It's mainly just the cans at
this
point. Yes. Okay. Yeah. But yeah, that's
one lady in Asheville who has their home. Yeah. She gets. Yeah. So maybe we can too.
But yeah, and before you get out of here, let's send you home with some proof alcohol ice cream. I think we still got a couple of our winter flavors in the kitchen freezer right now. So check it out. Think differently about dessert. You're blending 7% alcohol in every pint of ice cream, proof alcohol ice cream. Also coming from South Carolina, whose peaches are fine.
They're good.
They're good.
They're good.
Their honey sounds to be like it's pretty great. Awesome out there. But, you know, football, not so much. You know, how to rep, bro.
Can you have proof alcohol ice cream for dry January? I guess not, huh?
Sorry,
see, you're even screwing our sponsors.
Sorry, Jennifer. But I could serve it to people.
Yeah,
I can serve it to all the heathens. But all right, well.
Well, anyway, this has been awesome, Ben. Thank you so much for what you do. And we didn't even get into your seat on the Asheville board, the city board. But maybe that'll be another conversation for another time. But for now, everybody, go get yourself some Devil's Foot beverages, and you will drink very merrily.
Thanks for listening to the NCF&B podcast. And if you've stuck with us this long, review us on iTunes and remember, 5 stars are encouraged.